Welcome to DevCast, brought to you by Devrel Smith, the right people. DevCast is where property meets people, industry figures, news and views, what it takes to be your best. So sit back, earphones on, and enjoy this edition of DevCast.
Welcome everyone to the next in the series of our DevCast productions. We've got where we invite the leading lights from the property and real estate industry into our offices to talk about challenges specific to their market and their organisations. I'm very, very pleased to welcome Andy Belton. Andy is the COO at Notting Hill Genesis. Andy, perhaps you could start by telling the listeners a little bit more about your background and how you came to be the leading light that you are today.
Yeah, hi James, and thanks for having me do this. So as James said, my name's Andy Belton. I'm originally Irish. I moved to England in 1974 at the grand old age of nine when my family moved here. My claim to fame up to the age of nine is I went to school in Ireland with Bob Geldof. I'm not sure he remembers me, but...
Did you like Mondays?
I remember him, yeah, absolutely. So... and then I arrived in England, and it really was, I think my parents would have said in 1974 that England was paved with gold compared to Ireland at that time. So they were very happy. I went to a few different schools in London, and back then not everyone went to uni, so I decided to leave school at 16 and got straight into the property industry. In the sense that
I... So literally from 16 years old?
Yeah, so...
Man and boy, brilliant.
I went to work for the District Valuer's Office of the Inland Revenue in their Dover Street branch. Okay. And at that time, they so it's the government agency that values property. And
yep.
At that time, they were doing property valuations for rates, and I was involved in... So I joined as a clerk, but it was really interesting, and I ended up going out and surveying lots of property in the West End so that the valuation office surveyors could value it and argue with famous estate agents at the time. So, but after 4 years of doing that, I decided to move on, and I got into IT. So I moved to a branch subsidiary of NatWest Bank, and I trained in IT and became a programmer. And then a few years later, moved to a company called Unisys, which is a big American company.
Yeah.
And I had a 20-year career with them, originally in technology. Or
and all UK-based? Or
Mostly UK, but I spent some time in the States, and I ended up working for 4 years in the Netherlands as the general manager of a shared service center over there. So we moved all the back offices from the Unisys subsidiaries into a shared service center in Amsterdam.
Okay.
And I helped to with the work to move that, and then I ended up running it for 4 years. And that so from 1974, that got us to 2002. And I was in Holland with young kids, and we had to sort of decide really whether we were going to make our life in Holland then or come back. So we decided to come back. That was 2002. IT companies weren't doing great then. There wasn't really
a job. Right at the end of the TMT crash, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah, the dot-com boom stuff. Mm. And so I bailed out of Unisys. And as I say, I had young kids, so I was looking for something that wouldn't involve really traveling around. And at the time, Notting Hill Housing Trust were advertising for someone to come and help run one of their businesses that was in a bit of trouble. It was their temporary housing business. Where they leased a couple of thousand properties from private landlords and then let them out for homeless families. And they wanted someone who...
What a segue from...
I know, yeah. So they wanted someone who wasn't from the housing sector to sort of come in and look at it with a fresh pair of eyes. Mm. So it was ideal for me. I live in Hillingdon. The job was in Hammersmith. It was an easy commute, et cetera, et cetera. And it was really nice to, at that stage of my life, I was early 40s, to just... have a complete change of career. So I went into Notting Hill in 2002 on a...
How big were Notting Hill? I know they've become the beast they are now, but how big were they when you joined?
Notting Hill was established in 1963, so it was well established, and it was one of the bigger associations in London even then. Mm. So probably about approaching 20,000 homes then. It had sort of run into... it got itself into a bit of trouble. It wasn't really doing great with the regulator or the local authorities at that time, and probably wasn't getting a lot of things right. So soon after I joined, the top team left, and Kate Davis joined as the new chief exec in 2003. And Kate's still there. She's still the chief exec of what's now Notting Hill Genesis. But it's been through a massive period of change over the last... 17 years now.
So. How did you, because having recruited into and known a bit about the social housing sector for a good 12 years now, you would have been quite a trailblazer coming from a big multinational tech business into social housing in the early 2000s. There weren't many people transferring into that space by then. How did you find the transition?
I found it, it was really interesting for me because I knew nothing about social housing. I came in to sort of run a business with its own P&L, and I had to learn it from scratch. So it was very, very interesting for me. Culturally, it was quite strange, and I sort of I probably got myself into a pickle a few times in the first few weeks by, you know, asking people to do things maybe not in the right tone of voice or something like that, coming from a private sector company into what was a little bit of a sleepy housing association. I'm still here 17 years later, so it wasn't too much.
You kind of done something too significant.
I was a bit of a rarity back then. Mm-hmm.
And you touched on the kind of the cultural piece there. What were the significant differences between in my mind, and perhaps an unfair stereotype, a very fast-paced, profit-focused tech business, particularly an American-owned profit-focused tech business, and a purpose-driven social housing organisation in West London?
There were lots of people at Notting Hill who'd worked there probably for a long time, and lots of people who were very, very committed to the cause of social housing. But the world was changing, and they weren't really changing with it, I would say, and that was the sort of problem. So it was quite, it was quite slow paced. And I would say, probably in lots of areas of the business, it was, there were probably too many resources for what needed to be done and things like that. So it did need a little bit of a shake up back then.
So you joined in 2002 at a 20 strong business.
Yeah.
Give us a kind of a top line overview of how your career has progressed since that point. So obviously, 18 years later, we're still here.
As I say, it was a bit of a fishing expedition. I joined on a 2-year fixed term contract. Kate Davis joins Notting Hill in 2003, and then she really started to, work to turn the company around. So she recruited a new exec team, and the board changed. At that time, a lot of the non-exec board members had been there since 1963.
Oh wow!
So there were a lot of things that had to change, and Kate was instrumental in sort of moving those things along. And then after a couple of years of being there, Kate created a new role on the exec team, which was the commercial services director, and it was basically to come on the exec team and run the things that weren't social housing. So we were beginning to get into things like private sale, market rent, we had a temporary housing business, because the grant model was already beginning to change then, and we were getting less subsidy to build social housing. So if we wanted to continue developing, we had to subsidize that by making profits in other ways. So this whole area that we called commercial became something that merited an exec role, and I applied and got that role. And then a couple of years later, the exec person who was called the operations director, and he left. So he ran the social housing business and he left. Mm. He'd only been there about 18 months, and we decided that it would probably be a good thing at that stage to have me running all the operational businesses. And the job title was chief operating officer. So I took that on. At the beginning, I thought this is going to be a huge remit, and I did say, it's probably something that will change over time, and it did. So the exact nature of what the COO did has changed.
You're a rarity. There's not many COOs I know of.
It's got more fashionable now.
Oh, has it? You started a trend.
I think maybe we started a trend. Yeah. So there's a few now. So, and there's more chief officers of various things in housing association exec teams now. So, yeah. Anyway, as I say, I ran all the operations. Then it sort of morphed into at certain stages we brought other people onto the exec team and. We carved up the remit, and then in 2017, we'd been what I would refer to as dabbling with digital for years and years, and not really getting very far. And the board sort of challenged the exec team to get serious about it. And one of the things they said is you should get someone senior from the operations side to do this. It's not an IT project. And so I was offered that and I took it and I moved completely away from the operational side, kept the job title, but for the last 3 years almost I've been focused on this digital transformation project, which started in Notting Hill, and then a year into it we merged with Genesis, and it's become the one of the main strands of our sort of operational integration.
Brilliant. And obviously 18 years tenure in the organization, what's kept you there?
I think it is a really interesting sector. So, a lot of what we do is affected by central and local government. And then, as I say, over that period of time, we've also become much more commercial. We're now a business with 20 billion of assets. We turn over almost 800 million pounds a year. We make 100 million pounds profit. And we've got
just property. Saying those numbers tells you how much the market's changed, doesn't it?
That is an absolute
powerhouse.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. So, and we're very focused on London, and London's been up until a couple of years ago, after 2008, we were in a really good position. We were able to, really become a developer. We were able to buy our own land, and be the lead developer, bringing contractors, develop multi-tenure mixed-use schemes, and not just be reliant on buying Section 106 affordable from house builders. So it has changed, has really changed. We've also taken on a couple of big council regen projects during that time, and grown really on all fronts. And then, over the last 2 years, the market has obviously fallen away. And it's been much more difficult to maintain that cross-subsidy model. We're still doing it. We're still developing. We're still selling homes. But it's much slower this year than it was 3 years ago. And then also around us, the world has been changing, in terms of technology and the way people do things in their normal lives. And housing associations, including us, have been way behind the curve. We're sort of, in terms of our service delivery, we've been a 9-to-5 organization where you phone up to get something done, and our residents are no different to anyone else on the planet. They've all got smartphones, and they all want to, if they want to order a repair, they want to do it when they want to do it, and not when we're open. So it has changed massively, and we're sort of now positioning ourselves for this, for the 21st century, really, in the next decade.
Well, that leads nicely on to my next question, which was, where do you view the future of, I suppose, both social housing and in particular Notting Hill Genesis?
I think social housing to some extent probably has to go back to the future. So I think central government needs to face up to the fact that we need to build more homes. Mm-hmm. And the capital subsidy model is probably the best way to do that in the long term. That is the most cost effective way.
We'll do some clarity on that, I would imagine.
One of the things about the election is that hopefully now we've got a government who can make decisions and hopefully the bandwidth to deal with some of the home issues, domestic issues such as housing, transport, crime in London. There's a few that I could list off, but let's stick to housing. Yeah, so we've had I think we've had 18 housing ministers in the last 20 years. It's very difficult, for those people to make anything stick. So hopefully we now might have a period where, the government and the housing minister can come up with policies to, actually address the housing shortage and then, stick with it for a reasonable period of time.
I'm tempted not to ask you this question, so I don't want to put you on the spot too much, so please feel free not to answer it. But I would be fascinated to hear your thoughts on the government's role in trying to reduce the housing shortage, because it hasn't gone away. It's been there for quite a long period of time. The housing associations are trying to do everything they can to do that, but often sometimes with one hand tied behind the back from government challenges. What would you look to see change, or what would you like to see happen to give you guys a fighting chance to help resolve the issue?
I think, as I said, I think central government needs to go back to a bigger capital grant program, so that we can stimulate the building of those subsidised homes, and the rents of what is now, we've gone through a number of different rent regimes over the last few years. A lot of social housing is still at old social housing rents, which is very affordable in London. Yeah. It's become less affordable as those rents have increased to affordable rent and things like London living rent. So they're still very affordable compared to market rents, but market rents in London are probably at an all-time high and very, very expensive. So I mean there's a possibility of looking at some further rent controls, but that's very, very difficult, I think, for governments to do that. But I think the thing they can do is, as I say, go back to putting more subsidy in and make sure that the volume not only keeps going but increases as well.
And we've touched on the impact of having a majority government now, and hopefully the clarity that will bring. And I think it's not just housing. There's a lot of sectors who are quietly happy that there is at least a government that has a majority, and we'll get some consistency out of it, if nothing else. What about the exit from the European Union, or Brexit, whatever the words we want to use? What impact have you seen on that? I won't ask you your personal opinions, but
I'm happy to give my personal opinions. As I said in the beginning, I'm Irish and I'm married to an Italian, and I'm a sort of staunch Remainer. However, I think the last however long it is, 2 or 3 years of not doing nothing except talking about how we might either do it or not do it, have been quite damaging. So I'm quite pleased now that we're going to do something.
I agree.
And let's get on with it and do it. It wouldn't be my first choice, but I think doing nothing for years is definitely not my first choice. So I think it's good that we've got a government with a clear mandate.
Vote.
We employ quite a few EU nationals. We haven't seen a real impact yet. We're obviously reliant on the construction industry, which everyone knows employs really, really large numbers.
Well, that's what I was. In my mind, the social care staff, a significant number of typically overseas nationals of that. The construction industry, significant number of overseas nationals.
Yeah.
Are you worried about skill shortages as a result?
Yeah, we are worried, but as I say, we haven't really seen the impact yet. And I think it sort of goes back to the same thing that lots of people who are now going to be affected haven't done anything.
Yeah,
because they haven't known what to do or whether it would happen. And now I think lots of people, you see stories in the press and stories on the radio about people now, approaching the government agency to find out what they need to do. And some people are being really quite shocked, by the fact that, this isn't necessarily a straightforward process. I've got to jump through some hoops to stay in the UK or whatever it is. So, I don't think our I don't think our core business is at risk from people flight, but I do think the construction industry in London is definitely very reliant on European employees. So and I think as I say, we've seen those people sort of making the decisions they might make yet. So and lots of the economies in Europe that people came from years ago are much better these days. So, it may not be such a big decision to go back. So,
and when we were talking prior to this this podcast, we were talking around, I think you used the phrase, London was one of the major technology hubs.
Yeah.
Certainly within Europe, if not the world.
Yeah.
How do you see the advance of technology into social housing? And obviously, you mentioned earlier you've spent a significant period of the last 3 years focused on that. Perhaps you could tell the listeners a little bit more about that as well.
Yeah. So, well, I think it's, you know, I think it's really important to everyone in almost every aspect of their lives now. If you're a social housing resident, then, you know, you're no different to someone living in a private rented property. And you sort of, you know, you probably do your shopping online and you do your banking online and all those things. So, as I said, we as a sector, we've been behind the curve. We've all sort of tried things over the years and not done it very well. We've had websites as long as anyone else, and you could, I think in 2002 you could report a repair on Notting Hill's website, but it just sort of popped out the other end and nothing happened to it. So what we've done over the last 3 years is to develop this product that we call Workwise, and it's a web-based portal for staff and customers, and they can do the transactions that they need. So either staff to make the organization work for residents, or residents can self-serve. The most high volume, as is the case in most landlord-tenant relationships, are, rent account and payments. So yep. Paying your rent and dealing with repairs. So that's probably about 80% of the volume. And then there's a whole raft of other things that have to get done as well and come up less frequently. But we've...
So effectively trying to take a lot of the transactional administrative burden away from the core organisation and digitise it to free up more time and resource for the business. Is that right?
Correct. Perfect description. And we've used... We realized in 2017 that we didn't have the skills in-house to develop this. So we went out and we employed a digital agency who'd worked with companies like ASOS. And, you know, and we thought, well, you know, these guys know what they're doing. This is stuff that really works and is really 21st century. So they helped us to develop this over the first couple of years. And now we've brought it in-house and we've got our own development team. And we're taking it forward and gradually rolling it out so all residents can use it. And then the merger slowed us down a bit, because with the advent of the merger, we had two lots of underlying technology, so lots of, you know, 40-year-old systems that we've had to bang together. And we've done all that over the last 18 months, and now Workwise is available to all, not just Notting Hill, but all Notting Hill Genesis residents as well.
So 65,000?
65,000 homes. So
when did it go live and how's it been received, I guess?
We merged legally in April 18, and then we immediately sort of set about bringing the companies together operationally. Mm. And we've done that, as I say, over the last 18 months. We've had a central team working for me, and we've just gone around the whole organization team by team and looked at how we can bring, you know, the finance team, the HR team, the housing management team, the sales team, you name it. And then all of the related systems and processes. And we've also gone through a sort of complete staff terms and conditions consultation. And we've got another couple of things to do during February and March, but we'll be completely merged by the end of March, and we'll stop talking about legacy and integration and merger and stuff like that. We'll just be Notting Hill Genesis. So.
And am I right in thinking that Workwise is now up and running?
Yes. It's been in production for before we merged. It was in production, and we were very careful with it. So we only gave it to staff to start with. We didn't want to launch something to residents only to find that, you know, once again it falls flat on its face. So we were very, very cautious, and we tested it in a production environment with staff for over a year, and then only in 2019 we launched it to gradually to groups of residents. And what we've seen is that as we launch it to a group of residents, there's a sort of immediate uptake, and about 25% of the people that you launch it to start to use it immediately. And then it sort of starts to trickle through after that. And at the moment, we've specifically launched it to about 25,000 homes or tenants in those homes. And over 10,000 are now using it on a regular basis, but we haven't. But we want to get to the end of the merger before we do another big relaunch, and then we hope to sort of double or treble that number over this year. So,
if we focus on the yourselves as an organisation first, what are the benefits you've seen as a result of WorkWise going live?
Well, the great one of the things that we have in our operating model is that every one of our residents has a named officer who's responsible for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can phone us or email us, and we now have WorkWise that you can self-serve online. But behind all that, you still have a named officer who is your officer, who's responsible for the service you receive. And
which, one given the challenge some of your residents face, I imagine is crucial.
It is, and you know, the housing officers who do this work will tell you that, you know, they might have a patch of a couple of hundred residents, and you know, it's almost always the sort of 80-20 principle applies, that 80% of them sort of are getting on with their lives, and you know, if they need a repair they can order it and stuff like that. But it's the 20% who you know, may be vulnerable, and they really need that personal service and some more attention. So what WorkWise has done for the staff is it has allowed them to, you know, they can now be out and about and process transactions easily on their mobile phone, or more and more the residents are doing the simple stuff themselves. So it's really freed them up to focus on the people who really need that personal attention. And it's
which is, you know, a not insignificant statement, isn't it, when you say that, given the purpose of your organisation to help those who need it effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're in business to house people who otherwise couldn't afford it, and in lots of cases those are people who are in difficult situations. They may not be working, or they may be working, you know, in low paid jobs, and they have to deal with claiming benefits. They have to deal with, you know, in some cases quite complicated lives for other reasons. Mm. So if we've got, you know, staff who care about the work they do, and they can, you know, rather than focus their time on the sort of monotonous rent collection and repairs processing, and focus on the stuff that is really helping people and is also more interesting for them, quite
honestly.
That's
a real impact as well.
Yeah.
What are the benefits to the customer, and I suppose the wider sector of this? Because I know when we spoke prior to this, you were talking about the application perhaps outside of Nottingham Genesis as well.
Yeah. Well, I think the main benefits for the customer are that they can, you know, it is, you know, we become an organisation that is more 21st century and a bit like everyone else they deal with.
Which is not, again, a not insignificant statement to be able to make about social housing. There's not many parts in certainly in the last decade where you'd say it is.
No, we wouldn't. And we wouldn't have said it before this. You know, it's only it is only in the last year or 18 months that we feel confident to say that we are, you know, we're offering services that are on a par with lots of, you know, mainstream organisations, banks, you know, retailers. And that, you know, and ultimately that's sort of giving people choice. So, you know, there's lots of research now that, you know, people increasingly don't want to, you know, if I want to get something done online, I just want to do it online and I want it to work. Yeah. I don't want to talk to people halfway through it. If I do talk to people, then I want to message them. I don't actually want to pick up the phone as well. And it's really only when there's an emergency that I want to phone someone and know that, you know, I'm talking to a human being and they're going to send the fire engine in, you know, the next 10 minutes. But other than that, you know, I want to do stuff when it suits me, at the pace that I want to do it, and be sort of sure that, you know, what happens next is the thing that I've triggered. It actually produces, you know, so if I order a repair, the repair goes to a contractor, the contractor contacts me, makes an appointment, comes around, does it, and everyone's happy. I don't want to
chasing somebody on the phone.
Yeah, I don't want to
disappearing into the ether. You can actually track them real time.
Exactly. Yeah. So and that's what we feel like we've created. So people can be confident. They get messages that, you know, a bit like real life. So, you know, if you order something online, you get messages about what's happening next, don't you? You know. So we've done all of that, and then the choice is there. If it's a situation that I feel like I want to talk to a human being, I've got a housing officer to talk to as well. So.
What other avenues, or which other places in the sector could you see this working within, or which other organisations, if not places?
Well, I mean, having got to this stage, I mean, probably almost a year ago, we sort of, I mean, I part of my job now is being out and about and looking at technology and going to forums and talking to other organisations, because a lot of the ideas that we've adopted have not come from the housing sector, they've come from other sectors. But also talking to people in the housing sector, it feels to me like we are ahead of the curve at this stage.
Definitely.
So I've been talking, so we've showcased WorkWise. We're also, one of the things that we've done is also to partner with a completely independent company called Plentific that has a repairs platform. So it started off as a consumer platform where if I wanted something done in my home, I could put something out in a marketplace and then tradesmen would bid for it. And the platform managed that whole process. And they used us as a sort of lab environment in 2017 to adapt the platform for the social housing sector. And the benefit for them was, you know, they created a product that they could then go and sell to other housing associations, and they've subsequently done that. But we, you know, it's part of our solution now. It's actually part of the supply chain and the technology solution that people see in WorkWise. So we feel that we've got something with WorkWise that other people could benefit from. Yeah. And so we're actively talking to a number of other organizations about how we could collaborate on it going forward. So it's not so much about us selling, you know, they're not going to buy software from us. I wouldn't buy software from another housing association, but we've done something that we could, you know, put into some sort of commercial vehicle, and then everybody could collaborate around that to take it forward. Because now that we've started this, you know, you can't go back. We've got to feed and water this technology for, you know, ever really.
Quite a wonderful notion when you think about it. I was trying to think of any other industries where leading players will develop a market edge platform, ring their competitors up and go, hi guys,
yeah,
do you want to have a look at this? We've stumbled across something great. It could benefit you.
Yeah.
But that alone defines why I think the sector itself is such a wonderful place to be.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And I have lots of conversations with our peer organizations, and everybody sort of agrees in the room, yeah, this is a bit of a no-brainer. We should be doing it. We should be collaborating. These are not, you know, a lot of the things that I'm talking about, collecting rent and delivering repairs, these are not commercially sensitive. They're not competitive activities, so we should be doing it together and do it better. If we're developing new homes and we're all bidding for the same land, then, you know, it's not quite the same thing, but
yeah.
But these are things that, you know, we can do well together, we can do better together, and if we invest in the technology collectively, you know, we're just going to get much better value out of it. So
I think we've just got the strap line of doing better together.
Doing better together.
I suppose last question, where do you see the sector going in the next few years?
I think we'll do more of the same. As I said, right now we need central government to play a bigger role. We're all quite well positioned to deal with the property cycles, so we can
if you read the press, the market's back, I'm told.
The market's
even standard last night.
As of Monday, it's all back.
Yeah, it's on.
So
we can all not worry anymore. The Evening Standard told us. Yeah.
So, you know, we demonstrated in 2017 onwards that we can sort of throttle back in terms of development, and we can, you know, we can put our foot on the gas again if the market comes back again. But that still makes us very reliant on those cycles, and it would be better to have a sort of underlying government commitment, you know, for the next 20 years, let's say. That, you know, there is going to be a level of funding that keeps the supply going at a sort of minimum level. So, but the other things that have changed for us are the whole, you know, there's a big area of work around health and safety following Grenfell, and you know, all of the work that we're all going to have to do. In terms of you know, remedial works on buildings and things like that, it's not entirely clear what all of that is yet.
I think we're still waiting for the regulations, clarification from the government around what is needed from a cladding perspective, exterior.
Yeah, we've dealt with the ACM issues, and we're looking now at all of the buildings that sort of fall within certain criteria, like over 18 meters, we're all housing associations and big private landlords are all looking at those buildings to sort of see what potentially the issues might be. But as you say, there's a lot of clarification still to come from the rest of the second part of the inquiry, and also what the government decide to do.
Brilliant. Well, look, I'd like to thank you very much indeed for taking the time to come and speak to us. I found it very, very interesting indeed. And it's probably the first time I've ever walked away from a meeting with a senior executive from housing, having really thought that what the sector is now doing is leading the way and at least on par with the rest of the market. So thank you for sharing your time and thoughts with us.
Thank you, James.
You can join the DS movement by visiting ds.devrilsmith.com and you will receive the latest DevCast episode direct to your inbox.